In the 1920s, British visitors were already struck by oil's pervasiveness in American culture. Two of them, E.H. Davenport and S.R. Cook, set down this 1923 comparison. "Travel but a little in the country and you will gain the impression that the modernism of the United States flowed from its oil wells. Outwardly, oil occupies there the place which coal occupies in Great Britain. The oil field derrick is as familiar a landmark to the American as the pit head wheels to the worker in our black country. The oil tank car is as ubiquitous on his railroads as the coal truck is on ours. His wayside is dotted with the petrol pump, and at night illuminated oil filling stations make his streets beautiful. A network of oil pipelines underlies his country, more extensive than the network of railways overlying ours. Does not the American partly live in oil?" Certainly many Americans spent long hours in oil-powered vehicles. As automobiles took over from horses and buggies after World War I, they outstripped equine muscle with 40, 75, and 120 horsepower engines. In 1929, the United States was estimated to have more than two-thirds of the world's cars. The Germans, incurably mechanical, described the American economic and cultural giddiness of the 1920s in automotive terms: Fordismus. By 1950, Americans were consuming more than one-third of the world's energy output and nearly half of its oil, with gasoline as the single leading product. Nearly two-thirds of U.S. oil consumption was in this form. No oil expert could ignore the great American automobile craze. In 2004, after the United States had ruled global automobile ownership for a century, it was still a truism that having a car is a way of assimilating in America, and more often than not, it's also the only way of getting around. Public transit systems are rarely found outside of the cities, and they carry with them the stigma of catering to those people who can't afford a car. With the automobile being such a necessity and also a symbol of status, is it any wonder that America views life through a car windshield? Along with highways, service stations, motels, and such, the American oil infrastructure also enabled and supported major demographic and residential change, as seen in the extraordinary 20th century remolding of U.S. population distribution. To make the obvious analogy, it paralleled in magnitude, if not flow, the redistribution that coal had wrought in Britain. Following the huge 1901 Spindletop oil discovery in Gulf Coast, Texas, when wells able to produce 100,000 barrels per day dwarfed previous 5,000 barrel capabilities, Americans concluded that supply was enormous, verging on endless. Two more decades ushered in the petro landscape described by Davenport and Cook. Coal continued to lead for a while in percentage terms, but America's prevailing 20th century corporate, transportation, energy, and residential infrastructure was being shaped around petroleum. A century later, Spindletop's glories were only a recollection, like the boom times of Oil City, Pennsylvania. It lived on as a museum, 15 old buildings from the boom years. As for the huge East Texas fields discovered in the late 1920s and early 1930s, Daisy Bradford No. 3, Lathrop No. 1, and the rest, by 2004, production there had fallen from 160 million barrels a year in 1936 to just 10 million. In Midland, the oil capital of the West Texas Permian Basin, the major companies began leaving the area in 2000, and some studies suggest that the local oil industry will be gone by the 2020s. The U.S. oil industry is very old, Paul Holtberg, a senior researcher with the RAND Corporation, cautioned in 2002. There's no question that the resource here has been drilled more heavily than anywhere else in the world. Back in 1956, Marion King Hubbert, an American geologist working for Shell, had brought out a set of calculations interrelating the dates of the major U.S. oil field discoveries, their rates of production, and the peaks that he saw inevitably following. Fossil fuels such as oil, natural gas, and coal, squeezed into being by millions of years of massive pressure on concentrations of animal and plant matter, are not renewable. Using geological computations, Hubbert predicted that extraction of oil in the lower 48 states, Alaska had not yet been tapped, would maximize between 1965 and 1970. To the surprise of laymen, the peak did come in 1970, after which overall production in the lower 48 dropped steadily, despite all sorts of new tax breaks and breakthroughs in drilling technology.